online, but I really encourage people to go and find the paper in, full real life paper format and buy it from a vendor. There'll be vendors outside of our offices and lots of regular places as well.
Thank you, Karina. Appreciate you being here with me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO Portland.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Do you like discovering new music and reconnecting with some older but perhaps forgotten favorites? Then look no further. Tune into The Listening Room with host Timothy P. every other Thursday at 3 in the morning for a genre-bending 2.5-hour show where you never know what you might hear next, but you will be sure to be engaged and entertained.
Listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking today with Deborah Porta from Pride Northwest about the upcoming Pride Festival, July 19th and 20th here in Portland, Oregon. Deborah, welcome to Transpositive.
Hi, Emma. How are you?
Good, thanks. So, Deborah, it's going to be a big Pride Festival this year. Tell us what's going on.
It's big. We have our two stages. We have Frenchie Davis coming to town. it's we're the parade is full, the festival is full. It's just, it's just a big celebration.
Can you tell me the details? Where is it going to be? When is it going to be? That sort of thing. How much
Sure.
is it?
So the Portland Pride Festival remains one of the largest donation-based festivals, so no one's turned away for lack of ability to pay. Suggested donation is still $10. So as you mentioned, July 1920, it's going to be on the Portland waterfront between the Morrison Bridge and basically Ash Street to the north, a little bit north of that. So we'll take up the whole thing. And then the parade is on the 20th, steps off at 11 a.m. from the North Park blocks, and it'll end up right at basically just past Harvey Milk, right next to the festival.
Oh, great.
Oh, I forgot to mention the hours. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
So the festival is noon to 8 on Saturday, and then 11:30 to 6 on Sunday.
Oh, great. And the so the festival again this year, it's in July. I know it's moved. It had been in June years past, although the last year it was in July. Can you remind us again, why did we move it? Why did you move it to July?
Sure. Moving to July is something we've actually wanted to do for a really long time, and there just was no space on the waterfront to move to July. The one of the I guess if there's going to be a positive come out of the pandemic, it's that space opened up on the waterfront, so we were able to move. The primary reason that we wanted to move was because for so many years we were happening at the same time as the Juneteenth celebration and the Delta Park powwow. And what that created was this environment where people, whether we wanted to think that people had to choose or not, people had to choose how to honor their identities. We have so many intersecting identities in our community, and it just created this scenario where even though we as organizers didn't see it this way, we were sort of pitted against each other and as competing. And we wanted to break that dynamic, and we wanted to create an environment where we could build relationships with each other and all of these pieces. And so when the opportunity came for us to move our dates, we jumped on it. That's the big one.
So safety is always a big concern. Especially this year, it feels like trans and non-binary folks are facing more threats and just feel a little bit more concerned about their safety than they have in years past. Can you tell us what's going to be happening with public safety this year around the Pride Festival?
Safety is something that we always take seriously. And so we have a really strong foundation in place. We have a strong working relationship with Portland PD. They respect our boundaries. They work with us. They're part of the like traffic control, especially for the parade and that kind of stuff. And so we communicate ahead of time around boundaries, expectations, anything they might be hearing happening in the background, chatter, as they call it, so that we can, so that we know kind of what's coming and what's potential. We also engage our private security company. We just had a meeting with them last week around our expectations of engaging with our community and so on. I can't, but we, it's a lot of it is around communication and having the right people in the right place, paying attention, really. We definitely encourage our community to be our own best safety, to, keep an eye on each other, pay attention to things that don't feel right, that don't look right. That old saying of like, see something, say something, that's very true in this case. And then on the back end, we have a strong communication plan in place with our security partners for who's responding to what's the pro, all these pieces. And it sounds really logisticy because it kind of is, it's our ability to, we can't plan for every single moment that could potentially happen, but we try.
Thank you. So as you can imagine, the way my question was framed is because I wanted to go in for just a minute too. I know that there's a little bit of a discussion that's been happening in the transgender community. Mm-hmm. There's always been a pretty vocal portion of the transgender community here in Portland that, you know, doesn't want the Portland police at the Pride Festival. They don't want the Portland police in the Trans March, and they feel as if the Portland Police Bureau is basically, you know, it's, I mean, there's a discussion that the sense of community safety that is needed for an event like the Pride Festival or for the Trans Pride March specifically, really, I should just talk about the Trans Pride March, that mm-hmm. the sense of community safety is not represented well by the Portland Police Bureau. So can you address the concerns that came up within the trans community about this, and what has Trans Pride elected to do as a result of that this year?
Sure. And it's, you know, I want to be careful not to speak for Greater Portland Trans Unity, who organized the Trans Pride March and the rally.
Yeah, only in their communication with Pride Northwest, that's all.
Sure. No, totally. Well, it's, for us, it overlaps a lot because right. we communicate, obviously, with them.
Me too.
Communicate with the police and this, you know, this kind of thing. And our biggest role has been working with the Portland Police Department to recognize what they're needed for and what they're not needed for. And really helping them basically learn better about what their place is. And if they're not needed, they don't need to be in people's faces. They don't need to be, basically, this is kind of this understanding that we've come to at this point where, and it's the same, honestly, it's the same for the parade and for the Pride Northwest specific things as well. We have an understanding that if there's a situation or something's happening, we get to respond to anything first. Greater Portland Trans Unity gets to respond to anything first. The police will come if they're called, but otherwise they're going to stay as distant as they can. You know, they're not going to be roaming around the event. They're not going to be hanging out, you know, on the corner, this kind of specific to the Trans Pride rally. And if they're needed, they'll come. And it's really, again, in a lot of ways, it's the same for the other parts of Pride as well. Over the years, they've just learned to, you know, they traffic wise, they have to be present for the parade. But in terms of doing and being and whatever, they really work with us and we work with them to have them be as not present as possible while they're still doing their jobs.
Oh, great. Well, so the Trans Pride March will still be happening as usual, and it's so, under the
well, the Greater Portland Trans Unity and the organizers, the folks, everyone that works together on that, have decided to focus on the rally and the community connection pieces more so than the march itself. So they're not going to be marching, but they're going to be holding the rally in the North Park blocks with, you know, people tabling and resources and this kind of thing. They, over this last year, Greater Portland Trans Unity has put a lot of work into monthly gatherings and organizing efforts like these kinds of things. And so this is kind of an extension of that to keep in that arena of bringing community members together, building those ties, connecting to resources, planning for the future and all of that. And that's kind of where their focus has come to for this year.
Emma, I hope it's okay for me to jump in. I know I'm a few minutes late, so I'm not sure what all I missed, and I want to make sure that I'm not addressing anything that's already been discussed. So,
Emma froze.
Huh?
I think Emma froze.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if this was discussed earlier, but I know mm-hmm. a lot of people are concerned about Pride this year in particular because there has been a stronger backlash than most years prior, this year in particular, against the queer community and against especially the trans community. And we're dealing with so many people making threats of violence and even death against queer and especially trans people. So I do understand the concern about the police and people not feeling safe with them. I understand that that was addressed, but I do wonder, are things going to be different this year if we're taking these safety concerns into account?
We did talk a little bit about this earlier. I don't know if I would say that things will feel different, because we already prioritize security in a lot of ways, and we engage, you know, private security and other partners in these efforts. We are increasing some of those things, but we're also still really cognizant of the fact that our community doesn't want to celebrate Pride in an environment that feels overly monitored, right, and overly secure, whatever phrase we want to use. So it's always this balance of, at the end of the day, we're responsible for keeping tens of thousands of people safe. And there are things that we have to do in order to be able to do that. But we will always work to do those things in the most non-restrictive way possible. And we'll continue doing that. So I don't know if festival goers or parade goers will feel a difference, because we work really hard not to put all of those things in people's faces. But there are definitely efforts on the back end and in our security plan to have certain things definitely more secure and more monitored in general, at least on the back end.
Thanks, Deborah. So my understanding then is that there's going to be a gathering in the North Park blocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be part of the umbrella of Pride Northwest, organized by Greater Portland Trans Unity, that's similar to the trans assemblies that have been happening.
It's Greater Portland Trans Unity that's organizing that. It's not any different than in the years past. The only difference is their focus is more on the rally and on that gathering, as opposed to the gathering and then marching.
Right.
It is still definitely Greater Portland Trans Unity.
Right. But my understanding is that there may also be a march, but that march is going to be separate from any kind of involvement with the with Pride Northwest or the Pride Festival.
If that's happening, it is definitely not on our radar.
Okay. Do you have any questions, Nicolette? I've got a bunch of questions, but I haven't given you a chance to ask a question yet.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to ask, is there anything else we can expect this year that might be different from past years?
Not significantly so. We're really focusing on, you know, we had a pretty significant expansion the last couple of years. We expanded the space of the waterfront, for example. We added that second stage and that kind of thing. And so what we're really focusing on, at least for now, because at the end of the day, we've already maxed out the waterfront. So a lot of our future expansion is actually going to be into downtown. It's not going to be just making the waterfront larger. But in the meantime, we're focusing on elevating and improving what's inside already, you know, expanding and coordinating with the community spaces, for example, the veteran space, the family tent, the youth tent, the senior tent, and, you know, more activations in those areas, more interactive kinds of things. We're focusing on improving and expanding the talent that are on both stages, the experience that people can expect to have in those areas. you know, seating, all these different things inside what currently exists, because there's no real point in expanding and getting bigger and all that if we're not already taking care of what we, excuse me, what we have. So, especially in this time of, you know, there's so much unknown that we're all facing, and that includes Pride Northwest. That includes not just the event side, but the nonprofit side. And so we're really focusing on being the best at what we already do and making that a really great experience, so that, because those are things that we can control, for lack of a better way to put it. We don't know what's going to happen a year from now or 3 years from now. There's so much unknown in this country, and that really impacts our ability to plan certain things. So, you know, we're really focusing on what are the things that we can control, what are the areas of community that we can lift up and strengthen, and all of those things in the midst of all of this unknown. And then as time plays out, we'll know more, and that will tell us where we can go, if that makes sense.
Thanks. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Deborah, what are some of the major highlights of this year's Pride Festival?
We're expanding the VIP, which is great. So there'll be one on the north end and the south end. As I mentioned, we've been working with like, especially the youth tent. SMERC is hosting our youth space, and they're collaborating with PFLAG to actually put their spaces together and do some activities together and that kind of thing. I'm super excited about Frenchie Davis coming back to town, I have to say. She's just a sweetheart, and you know, it's we're working on, I think I mentioned that we're working with partners around future expansion of Pride into downtown. So there are activations happening in other parts of downtown that are Pride connected. This is also our way of being able to expand accessible activities and accessible environments in celebrating Pride, because we're so limited in the things that we can do on the waterfront around accessibility until the city actually invests in doing some things there. You know, I mean, there are a lot of things that it's, I'm not going to say it's the same
Are you
as.
still doing, are you going to be doing those ramps again this year? I mean, the walkways, is that going
Oh,
to be?
yeah, definitely the walkway. And we, you know, just like last year, we moved our entrances, two of them, to coincide with those two big sidewalks that go on to the waterfront. So we've done that again. We're also engaging a sort of just a volunteer army, for lack of a better way to put it, to monitor the grounds, to rake, to move dirt. We're doing things ahead of time to kind of clamp down the dirt. Again, these are the things that we can do within the confines of the waterfront until the city itself, you know. And that's the other part on the background that doesn't hit the news, is we're working with the city, we're working with the other event organizers on the waterfront, the big ones, around what needs to happen to the waterfront to ensure that it's accessible, and recognizing that we, between us all, we pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to do what it is that we do, to make as accessible as possible. And eventually, you know, I mean, the city has to do its job.
Can you speak about the festival's economic impact in Portland?
Sure. Well, last fall we had an economic impact study done for the 2024 celebration, partly because we wanted our own numbers. We want to be able to know what our impact is. And partly because at the end of the day, money talks. And if decision makers are making decisions about our community, they need to be aware of the impact that we have, if that makes sense. And you know, the for our 2-day event, it was a limited study just because they're expensive to do, in all honesty. So they studied the couple of block area around the waterfront and then along the parade route, right? And they do it through a lot of cell phone, a lot of data collection, cell phone, all these other pieces to figure out basically how much money gets spent. And you know, the total economic impact of our event is as high as $11.4 million for the region. It's as high as, you know, as much as $4 million in tax revenue for the state and for the region. And that's significant. It's a big, that's a big deal. And I, one of the biggest reasons that I wanted us to do this report is because I want our community to recognize what it is that we've accomplished here. Not just Pride Northwest has accomplished, but our community has accomplished. Because that doesn't even include all of the other Pride things that happen. You know, that doesn't include, that's just that 2 days specific to our event. And you're talking about hotels, restaurants, stores, transportation, all of these things bringing this revenue into our region. And that matters. And our community, I think our community should be proud of that. That we and own that we have that kind of impact. I think too often because our community isn't resourced very well. You know, we have a lot of low income community members. We have a lot of unhoused community members and so on. And there's this, sometimes there's this perception that we're just extracting, that we're not contributing here. And it's just not true. We are contributing in real solid economic ways to the health and vitality of this region. And I think it's important that we recognize that and that policymakers and decision makers recognize that.
How do you balance creating a celebration with recognizing Pride's roots in protest?
Well, that's always an interesting balance, you know, because we, how do I answer that question? A lot of how we approach that comes in the form of where we put our money, where we lift up and prioritize and center Black, Indigenous, and queer people of color, whether it's in artistry. Folks that we hire, exhibitors, vendors that come, you know, where it is that we're putting the resources that we bring as an organization and where we put that. You know, at the end of the day, while Pride began as a demonstration, it is a celebration and it has always been a celebration. You know, the origins of Pride go back before Stonewall and all of the work that came after Stonewall. And there has always been a celebratory component to that because part of what Pride is owning our space in the public sphere and celebrating who we are as people. And so that has always been there. And I think in this day when at least in this region, it is definitely a celebratory thing. It's also our opportunity to lift up and continue bringing visibility to the issues impacting our community. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we are not a well-resourced community. There may be people in our community who have wealth, who have comfort in those things, but the majority of our folks are not in that space. And we still face, as you mentioned earlier, increasing discrimination, increasing attacks like this. We're in a really precarious place right now. And Pride's place as the bullhorn, as our greatest visibility, we utilize that to keep lifting up the things that are impacting our community that are way beyond just having a fun party, just having a good time. And at the same time, we're going to celebrate.
Thanks. Who's the president of Pride Northwest this year?
Our board president is Kathan Tautfest, who has been on the board. They're the interim president right now. They've actually, Kathan, I consider Kathan to have grown up with us because they were a volunteer when they were in high school. And they've been on the board for a number of years, serving as vice president, and now they're board president, and an amazing voice, very thoughtful, very deliberative in their decision making and in their focus, and very community focused, which I have high respect for.
Great. And who's going to be, are you having like a grand marshal this year for the parade?
We are doing that. We're getting ready to announce. It's taken a minute because we never do our grand marshal the normal way or the typical way. Yeah. So we have actually a group of three. We're honoring Kathleen Sadat, which I think is long overdue. Kathleen Sadat is a renowned Black lesbian leader in our community who has done so much over the years, not the least of which was organizing the very first Pride March in Portland in 1976.
Oh, wow.
We're also honoring the Portland Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who are celebrating their 20th anniversary this year in Portland.
And then only 20?
Oh, I right? I thought it was way longer than that. I've been here longer than they have. And the Portland Lesbian Choir, who are celebrating their 35th anniversary this year as well. So,
oh, great.
So it'll be fun.
Is everybody from the Portland Lesbian Choir going to be marching then?
I think there's going to be a lot. Yeah. they're
it's
excited.
It's hard to like distinguish like some of them from the Dykes on Bikes.
Right? You know, they'll be the ones that are singing. So
how about the Portland Lesbian Choir on motorcycles?
Oh, that would, oh, talk to Sparky and see what she's so yeah, it'll be fun.
Nicola, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple. Well, first I wanted to ask, hold on, before I ask this question, Emma, what day is this going to air?
July 15th.
Okay. Oh, well, okay, let me phrase it this way. So every year I get people, well, since this started happening I get people asking me, well, isn't Pride Month in June? Why is Portland Pride and Vancouver Pride happening in July? Like here in Vancouver, we're having our Pride the weekend before Portland Pride. Mm-hmm. Both are taking place in July this year. And so ever since we started doing that, people keep asking, well, why are we having Pride in July? Pride Month is in June. And I know you've addressed this on past shows, but do you want to explain again why we're doing our Pride here in July?
Sure. I mean, first, I think it's important to recognize that there are Pride celebrations all over this country and all over the world that have never happened in June. You know, I mean, Dallas, I'm from Dallas, Texas. Their pride is in, what, September? I think Palm, you know, there are prides that have never been in June. I personally think that June is not big enough for all of us to be at the same time. Our specific, and Vancouver Pride has happened in July for a long time, actually. The reason that we moved in 2023, so this will be our third year in July, the primary reason we moved, we had wanted to do it for a really long time, was because we always overlapped with the Juneteenth celebration and the Delta Park powwow. And whether we wanted it to or not, that forced people into making decisions about what part of their identity they happen to want to honor and where they might feel comfortable and celebrated and accepted. And none of those spaces really worked separately very well. So that was the big motivator. There, you know, a couple of the weather's bonus, right? Everybody remembers the mud pit from 2022, and we don't want to go back there. But that's the big one. And, you know, moving has allowed us to really start building relationships and allowed folks to, you know, like, for example, a couple of weeks ago, we've tabled now for 3 years and been present at the Juneteenth celebration. And people remember us now, and they're the growth of the event has been impacted. There are so many queer folks of color who go through there, and otherwise, right? The relationship that we're building with them, with the organizers, just continues to strengthen. We sponsor that event. The powwow has only been back for, I think this was the second year. They took longer to come back. But even then, you know, building relationships with our Two-Spirit community has just become more possible with, because we have time to talk to each other. You know, we're not all organizing at the same time to do the biggest thing that we do of the year. We have time to actually send a note and talk to each other and think about and be present at each other's celebrations and this sort of thing. So it's already having an impact in the ability that we have to make connections and that sort of thing. So that's the big one. That's the biggest piece.
Thanks. Deborah, how can people get involved or volunteer for Pride this year? Is it too late to get involved?
No. It's never too late to sign up to volunteer. We're actually actively recruiting volunteers, particularly for, of all things, early morning. Early morning is usually the thing that fills up the quickest. And for some reason, people are like, they don't want to get out of bed this time. So the easiest thing to do is go on our website. You can, you know, there's a link there, either on pridenw.org or portlandpride.org, and sign up, get on the list, all of that. That's the easiest thing to do.
What's been the most rewarding part of your role in organizing the festival this year?
Oh, this year? Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't had to make decisions about porta potties, so that's exciting. I mean,
are people not going to use them this year? Is that
I just don't have to be the one to do it. I mean, it's rewarding every year. The thing that's most rewarding pretty much every year is the energy that starts to come and the conversations that come up, even difficult conversations move us forward, right? And connections that are made, that's always really the best part of organizing it for me, you know. And the weekend itself, nothing is ever going to match the energy that comes across the festival when the parade starts coming. It's just, literally the air is just electric. And being able to see, seriously, the joy that people are experiencing in the moment, that's always the payoff for me.
Are there any changes to the parade route this year? What is the parade route?
No changes to the parade route. It's really difficult to figure out a parade route in the city of Portland. There's so many different moving, the MAX, the buses, construction, all these things. So the route is the same. It'll kick off Broadway and 8th? I think it's 8th. No. Davis, sorry. 8th and Davis, right in that area. It'll go east to NATO and then south on NATO down to the festival.
Yeah, that was something I was going to ask about, is I know, at least in past years, I've always had this issue of like trying to figure out where the parade route is and when to be there so that, you know, I know where to go and when to watch the parade. So like, is there somewhere people can go online to find the parade route? How do they know what time it starts? Do you have any information on that?
Oh yeah, that's out Portland, portlandpride.org. Can go on there. Up at the top menu, there are drop downs, and there's one specific to the parade. There's one specific to the festival that has the times, links to the route map, and that kind of stuff. It's all portlandpride.org.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. So Deborah, we're kind of getting near the end of the interview. I just wanted to ask you a couple of last questions. One is, what is your vision of the future for Portland Pride? Where do you see it going in the next 5 years?
Well, assuming that, you know, the world doesn't cave in, Because you know that's just a thing these days. I see Portland Pride expanding across the downtown core, and looking, trying to think of the model. I know that Palm Springs and a couple of others do things where we're not moving away from the waterfront. That's still the home, but we want to be able to expand the experiences that people can have. Multiple stages, sort of mini street fair style. It really depends. And that's when I mentioned earlier that we're working with partners who are doing other activations downtown this year. We're partnering with them to make for them to be extensions of Pride. The Midtown Beer Garden, I think it's called, is one. And then there's something also happening up in Old Town that it more we're waiting for their materials to be able to put out. And that's really what we envision, is being able to grow the Pride experience in multiple ways. Because even on the best of times, best of years, even the waterfront isn't for everybody. It's a big, loud, messy, rambunctious place. So how can we expand the Pride experience to create different kinds of opportunities for people to celebrate their pride? And that's really how we envision growing Pride itself, is growing, expanding the number of opportunities, the kinds of opportunities to celebrate Pride, and to really showcase the fullness of our community's talent, artistry, creativity, all of those things.
Have you ever, I'm sure you've already talked about this, but have you ever thought about moving part of it to Pioneer Square, which is super accessible, super transit friendly, kind of ready-made for festivals?
It is definitely on the radar for a lot of this has to do with capacity. I mean, we're a crew of five.
Oh, you've increased by one. Congratulations.
That's why I don't have to do porta potties anymore.
Right.
It's what we do is already a year-round planning process, and that's on top of everything else we do throughout the year. So some of the ability to expand has to do with also expanding our own capacity to do those things. But yes, Pioneer Square is definitely on our radar, and on the list of, like, well, of course, Pioneer Square, there are so many parking lots. There's so many, sort of not vacant spaces because those are buildings, but there are areas around downtown that can completely become an additional experience. Absolutely.
We're talking with Deborah Porta with Pride Northwest about the Portland Pride Festival. We're getting near the end of the interview. Sheila, you've just joined us. Sheila, do you have any questions for Deborah? We've basically talked so far about the festival. We've talked about issues around public safety. We've talked about the parade. We've talked about the future of the Pride Festival. What would you like to add to the conversation, Sheila?
I'd like to talk a little bit about the historical experience. My first Pride Parade was up in Seattle, and in those days it was all up on Capitol Hill, which was kind of right in the sense what was called the gay ghetto of Seattle. And through the years, I watched it move from first just kind of a political awareness, we're here. Then I think it went through a period where a lot of it involved politicians more or less looking for votes and going, going through the streets with that. Then we went through the AIDS crisis, and a tremendous amount of the parade was just the AIDS service things like Shanty Project and things like that, and Chicken Soup Brigade. And now I'm looking at, then we went through the kind of, we're going to show the breadth and depth of the community. And we had everybody from leather people to motorcycles, and we've always had all the different groups. And now what I'm wondering in light, and I wanted to ask the group in light of the situation with the Trump thing and the, apparently a lot of the corporations that used to advertise and and try to be very proactive for the LGBT community are really trying to have a lot lighter footprint and don't really want to be. It's kind of started with the beer problem about a few years away with a trans person representing and the boycott that resulted. And it's funny, it always comes down to beer. In the old days, it was the Coors problem, and then Coors yes. finally jumped aboard. And but I'm wondering, as in light of what's going on towards our community, do we have to pivot in our whole ideology? Are we just having it as a day of celebration, or does it still have a political edge to kind of be a communicative vehicle to people that not only are we here, but that we deserve respect? I wonder sometimes if we should be careful about airing our dirty laundry in public for fear that we're going to actually activize the people that are coming after us, in that because they love to take the most outrageous pictures they can and use that as their recruiting device for anti-LGBT stuff.
Boy, that's a lot. You know, I mean, and we did talk a little bit earlier about, at least for Pride Northwest, Pride is this combination of celebration, because it's always been a celebration from day one. It has always been, at least in part, a celebration of who we are in our community. And also recognizing that it is it's a bullhorn. It is the largest tool that we have for elevating the real experiences of our community and what's happening in our community, the issues that we deal with, and the things that impact us. We are definitely taking ownership of, and we talked a little bit about this too, for Pride Northwest, we're definitely taking ownership of the impact that we have in this region, particularly economically, because at the end of the day, money talks. Whether we want it to or not, in this society, money talks. And it's important that we own the fact that we have a large economic footprint here, and we have impact here, and policymakers, decision makers need to pay attention to that. And that, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody in this region, for example, is thinking about coming after our community, really, and at this point we're talking politically, or taking something away, they're going to want to think twice, because they're shooting themselves in the foot, for lack of a better way to put it, because we aren't just a small minority sitting over in the corner here. We bring a lot to the table in this region, and I think it's important for our community to recognize that and to own that, because it's a tool. You know, having a large enough anyway, a significant Pride celebration has a direct correlation to the health and well-being of any city's Pride queer community. There's a direct connection there. Visibility matters. Not to be inappropriate, but size matters here, you know? because of the impact that we have. And it is our responsibility, in my opinion, to make sure that the people who are making the decisions that impact our lives don't forget that.
The Trump administration recently renamed the battleship Harvey Milk, in a blatant attempt to try to erase mm-hmm. The progress that LGBTQ folks have made in the elected arena. We've seen Sarah McBride being misgendered by a fellow congressional House member in the U.S. House, blatantly in public. We also know that the administration is trying to erase the T from the Stonewall National Monument. Who's coming to represent, who's coming to stand out as an elected official this year at the Pride Festival to show that, you know, our elected leaders stand with us at this moment when our rights are under attack?
So that depends. We don't actively invite very many elected officials to like speak from the stage, because as you kind of alluded to earlier, a lot of times that's about somebody who's running for office. That's about somebody who wants to get reelected. That's about words. That's like, that's a platform that maybe electeds deserve and maybe they don't. I want to see our elected officials show up without the grandstanding part. This is one of the, like, there are always, every year, a lot of elected officials from all levels who participate in the parade, for example. Sometimes they register on their own. That's rare. Most of the time, they'll march with groups that are meaningful to them, like Basic Rights Oregon, HRC, some to CAP. It depends. But they're always there. I do believe that most, if not all, of the Portland City Council is going to be marching with the city this year.
Oh, great.
That'll be, I will count them when I see them at the end of the parade. And I do think, I believe we've situated, I believe the Portland, the council president will be speaking from one of the stages. She's a member of our community. And that, for lack of a better way to put it, that elevates her to like, okay, we'll put her on the stage.
Are there any representatives from the state house, state senate, congressional delegation, or the governor who will be
there? Will be there in marching? Yeah. Oh yeah. Invariably, every year somebody from all of those levels marches in the parade. Again, they don't, especially if they're not registering on their own. They don't tell us that they're going to be there. Some of that is safety, and some of that is just they're not registering directly with us. And so we don't know that they're going to be there until they show up. I do look at that at the end of the parade, and you know, to see who is it that's come. And every year they're from all the levels, city, county, metro, sometimes state and federal are in the parade every single year.
Great. Yeah. Some year I would love to see Governor Kotek give a speech at the festival. I mean, I think it's really appropriate. It would be, you know, very respectful of the governor to come and address the community.
I will share that with her, actually, with her people. I would like to see the same thing. Okay.
Do we have any final questions for Deborah, Sheila, Nicolette?
I guess all I want.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, the thing that I'm very aware of, I've read a lot of the LGBT history, and I think it's really interesting as a phenomenon that, you know, kind of Stonewall has and Harvey Milk, and the really early period was asking really very little. It was asking for just basic recognition that a group of people did exist that were systemically harassed by the police. And now, we're watching, I keep thinking ICE is going to pivot. One of these days, they'll move from immigrants to domestic enforcement of other groups that they consider a threat. And I worry about that. And I think sometimes as a community, in the excitement and celebration aspect, we lose the sense of how we can make bridges to other communities that are equally threatened right at this time. That's always been a question of, should we be concentrating only on ourselves and only on our sexual expression, or are we about something bigger than that? And I was always real proud that during the AIDS crisis, the LGBT community stepped forward to fight AIDS, period, not just AIDS in the gay community. And I thought that was so inspiring as a witness that there was a lot of generosity here and not just self-indulgence.
That's a great segue into a question, Sheila, which would be, what is Pride Northwest doing this year to stand with immigrants?
Well, a couple of things. One, we are a member of the Our Oregon. You're going to catch me off guard. There are several coalitions, one of which is specific to this issue, that Pride Northwest is the only LGBTQIA2S plus member of. Very similar to the Welcome Home Coalition. We're the only LGBTQIA2S plus organization that's a member of the coalition. And working with, you know, know your rights, a lot of it's education, you know, making sure that our folks, because for us, to be really clear, there is no LGBTQIA2S plus community and then the other communities. There's no such thing, because none of those, no other identity exists without some of us in there. So every community intersects with queer folks.
Yeah, the first woman to be deported by ICE.
Right, there's recently. A reason for that. Mm-hmm. Let's not ignore that. There's a reason for that. And part of the reason that we're in the room with other immigrant rights organizations is also to not lose sight of that piece, because part of it is, you know, there's this cultural crossover where, you know, you're also talking about communities that have their own struggles with their queer members, right? And being able to make connections and have dialogue and talk to each other so that everyone is represented, everyone is included in protections and so on, because that's not an automatic thing simply because it's another group of oppressed status, basically. So our voices still have to be in those rooms.
Great, thanks. I hate to cut you short. You've been really generous with your time, Deborah. We're just about out of time for the show, so I'm going to give Nicolette the last question and then ask Nicolette to close us out.
I mean, I think we've made a lot of points about what Pride is and the history of it, but I guess all I want to ask as a final thought is, what does Pride mean to you?
To me? Pride is a tool. You know, for Pride Northwest, it's Pride. Pride is not who we are; it's what we do. Pride is a tool for the movement, and it's a tool for building community, strengthening community, educating community, and envisioning where it is that we want to go as people. And it's a tool for getting there.
Great, thanks. We've been talking today with Deborah Porta, the director of Pride Northwest, about the upcoming Pride Festival. Deborah, where is the Pride Festival again, and how can people find out about it?
So it's on the waterfront between the Morrison Bridge and basically Ash Street, July 1920. And all of the information can be found on portlandpride.org. Who's going to be there, times, all of that.
Great. Thanks, Edit Point. Nicolette, do you want to close us out?
Sure. You've been listening to Transpositive. We all hope you have a happy Pride. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender. transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Sylvester the Boogie Cat, meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.